Weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, hello there. Welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, February 5th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm here on 2FM, Keith Tracy is with us to chat soccer after Mason Melia's record-breaking League of Ireland transfer. In Gaelic Games, Nadine Doherty reviews and previews all the latest Ladies Football League action, while Damien Lawler has the latest GAA news headlines and an interview with former Kilkenny Camogie star Miriam Walsh. Plus, we'll round up the rest of today's sports news headlines. As always, you can get in touch by text 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or join the conversation on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On. Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along to an hour of sport here on 2FM. Keith Tracy and Nadine Doherty already in studio with us. Nadine, how's the form?
Great, Shane. And yourself?
Keeping very well. Yeah. Thank you very much. Keith, all good?
Yeah, top of the world. How are you?
Very well. Very, very well. Thank you both. As we look forward to... it's the League of Ireland launch day, actually. Officially launched today. So it was in the Mansion House. So happy League of Ireland launch day to one and all who celebrate.
So exciting, isn't it?
I've enjoyed the break, I'll be honest. I've enjoyed the break.
You've been able to sit back as champion, haven't you, and just glow. It's been brilliant for you.
Well, I must say, according to Sky Sports, I must congratulate you for winning the League of Ireland last year. They went for lazy journalism. I had to get that in there. St. Pat's League of Ireland champions, according to that. Anyway, lots to look forward to, lots to chat about. Nadine, cracking weekend of ladies football on the weekend
really
as well.
Good, Shane, actually. And the men's. I was actually thinking on the way over. It's a long time since I enjoyed the men's football just as much as the women's. So
you're a fan of the new rules?
Like, you know, you're trying to catch as many games as you can. So I watched the GA highlights of all the men's games. And a good start for Donegal, obviously, against Dublin. Yeah, it's just been positive. Like, all you have to do is look through the scores and most teams are, you know, 15, 20 plus points. So far, so good. Anyway, I saw Canavan, you know, was talking about the clubs implementing them. And that will be difficult, look. But still, I still think it's a massive positive and all these big changes take time. So all for the better.
OK, good stuff. Nadine, you can down tools for a wee bit. We're going to chat Association Football and Damien Lawler will join us on the line before we get stuck into all of the ladies' football action. Some news headlines first up. Tadhg Furlong and Joe McCarthy have been ruled out of Ireland's Guinness Six Nations game against Scotland, but Finlay Balaam and Mac Hansen are on course to be fit. Prop Furlong suffering a calf injury and Loch McCarthy, who suffered concussion, missed Saturday's victory over England, while Balaam and Hansen both picked up leg injuries during the match. However, John Fogarty told the media today that they've trained just now and looks positive for both for that match, of which you can hear live commentary on RT Radio 1's Sunday Sport this weekend. In Gaelic Games, bad news for Cork. Cork will have to plan without Pádraig Power for the rest of the season after it emerged that the forward suffered a torn cruciate ligament in the draw with Limerick. The Blarney man had been forced off with a dislocated shoulder early into the Allianz Hurling League Division 1A clash last Saturday and was subsequently also diagnosed with the knee injury that will rule the 24-year-old out for the rest of the year. So bad news, and hopefully Pádraig Power does make a return. Alex Dunn in motor racing. Alex Dunn will become the first Irish driver to compete in the FIA Formula 2 Championship after the Offaly native confirmed that he has secured a 2025 drive with the Roden team. The 19-year-old, who became part of the McLaren driver development programme last May, raced in the F3 Championship last year, achieving 2 sprint podiums. But he will now make the step up to the final rung of the ladder, leading towards the prestigious F1 Championship. And finally, Croke Park looks set to host Ireland's first NFL game later this year, with the government briefed today on the proposal to bring a Pittsburgh Steelers fixture to GAA headquarters. There is speculation that the Steelers will take on the Green Bay Packers in September. The business case for state funding is currently being worked out between the NFL and the Department of Arts, Tourism, Media and Sport here in Ireland.
Game On. Football.
But we are chatting football now in the company of Keith Tracy. And as I mentioned in the intro, Keith, a record-breaking transfer for Mason Melia. And good news for St. Pat's, there's going to be money in the bank when this transfer does come true, and possibly figures that could raise to €4.2 million, 20% sell-on fee. A well-negotiated transfer, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it is. Mason, look, first and foremost, Mason has such a high ceiling that, you know, the figure of a 4 million, possibly rising to 4 million, doesn't really surprise me that much, because I think I had him probably for a handful of games when I was involved with Pats' under-17s, and we only got him because he needed minutes. So we were told basically, look, Mason's going to be playing, and that's just the way it is. And when I first came into the club, we had a couple of strikers, and I, like I say, I was handed Mason, and the manager at the time, John Donoghue, was sort of elbowing me saying, you're going to love this kid. And within about 2 minutes, I absolutely fell in love with Mason. And it wasn't because of anything sort of, you know, any sort of skillful thing that he did. It was just his work rate. Because, like I say, he was sort of in between. He was too good for the 17s, not quite in the first team just yet, and needed minutes. So I know from my own experience, when you've had a taste of the first team, you've been training, you get told, look, you're playing for the 17s today. I used to spit me dummy out, and sometimes I didn't play very well. But Mason, no, he just had a smile from ear to ear, ran around, scored goals, and he just looked a little bit better than everybody else. So it's no surprise whatsoever. And he's a really, really humble young fella, and I hope it stays that way.
Mm, I do want to pick your brain a bit more on that, considering you have coached him and you know him personally. But Stephen Kenny was on Morning Ireland this morning chatting about the record transfer fee, as we mentioned, Pats and Spurs agreeing on an initial fee of €1.8 million.
Yeah, and he's just recently turned 17, so I think Mason's from Newtown Mount Kennedy in Wicklow. Obviously, we have a full-time environment at St. Patrick's, so his mother drives him up every morning. His mother Pamela drives him to Dublin, and we often have double sessions, so she spends the day there to bring him home. And tremendous commitment from his family, really, in that period. But he obviously, as a 16-year-old, we played 6 games in the Europa Conference League qualifiers last year. As a 16-year-old, he played as the lone striker, as a centre-forward, against Istanbul Başakşehir, knocked Manchester United out the previous season in Europe, and or they played them. In fact, they beat them in a group. Didn't knock them out, played them in a group match. And you know, he was able to go up against internationals at that level as a 16-year-old centre forward, and acquit himself really well. Yeah, he's a very modest young man. Certainly hard working, very high work ethic. I think that's what set him apart as well. Like, you know, he's phenomenal out of possession pressing, like, in terms of, apart from his individual skill, his ability to score goals and the threat he carries, his attitude out of possession and his insatiable desire for hard work is obvious. So he's very young, obviously, and there are pitfalls in every career, but he has all the attributes to do very well. He's been very an important player for St. Pat's this season in qualifying for Europe, in our European campaign. And, you know, we're looking forward to the season ahead now, which starts Friday week, and he'll play his part in the team. Gary Kelleher, the owner of the club, obviously was highly involved in negotiations. That's certainly outside my remit. And, you know, he was involved doing that. Obviously, Director of Football, Gerard O'Brien, recruited Mason initially as a young player. But listen, from our point of view, he just has to continue to enjoy his football. He doesn't need any undue pressure on himself. He just needs to continue to enjoy his football. He hasn't been able to train in the last few weeks because we've given him an extended rest period because he had a back issue. So we've given him extended rest, and he's back recently training. And we're looking after him, making sure he's right. And this news has been impending with a lot of clubs. And he could have gone to Italy or Belgium, possibly Germany. He could have gone now. Obviously, he could have moved there last year or this year, but he got the move that he wanted, which was, you know, I think that's the move that he really wanted, to Tottenham. So he'll have a year with us now till next January, and he will move to Tottenham then.
St. Pat's manager Stephen Kenny speaking to Damien O'Mara on Morning Ireland this morning. Key phrase Stephen used there, doesn't need undue pressure. He's going to be in the spotlight even more now with the record transfer fee. Even we look at the league being launched today, and so many questions. We might hear from Damien Duff a little bit later on Mason Mealy. It's a lot of conversation centred around a very young boy.
Yeah, he is. He is a very, very young boy. And, you know, it's very easy to get excited when you sit here and you think, you know, record figure, Spurs player at such a young age. But he is still learning. And, you know, I feel like I've been in this boat. A lot of people think having the talent to play in the Premier League is the hard side of it. A lot of people have the talent to play football at an extremely high level, but there's other pitfalls, like Stephen has just alluded to. There's so many things that can trip you up. He's a young lad that's going to go and move to a different country, different way of training, different way of going about things, different way of life. So, like I say, Mason has all the tools in his box to go and be whatever he wants. If he wants to go and be, you know, a legend for Ireland, he has that in the locker. If he wants to go over there and come back in a couple of years, that's obviously a possibility as well. But like I say, it's a blank canvas, and he can do anything he wants, and very, very exciting for him, and can't wait to see where he goes.
Yeah. Obviously, due to Brexit rules, he's unable to join an English club until his 18th birthday, so that's the delay. So good news for Pat, he'll be here for the season. We'll join in January of next year as well. And the support network he has, even the mention of Pamela, his mum, driving him up from Wicklow every day and staying around for the double sessions, it's important to have that support network. How beneficial do you think it will be to Mason, the fact that he's not going over until he's 18? And I say that with someone who obviously went straight from Belvedere to Blackburn underage.
I think it's massive. The comparison I use is I went when I was 15, but my uncle David Cassidy went when just after his leaving cert, and David mentally is a lot sounder than I am, a lot more put together. And look, it really did scare me. And I probably did most of the things over there as a young age to myself, but you know, once you go over there and you start setting the world on fire, or you start breaking into the first team, or you're a Mason, and you know people are saying he's come here for £1 million from an Irish league, he's going to have a big reputation there. It's easy to start acting a clown. It really is very easy. But from what I've seen in Mason, what I've seen in him in the academy at St. Pat's, he's not that way inclined. But like I say, going into the big smoke down in London, it can be very, very tempting. But he does seem to have an awful lot of good people around him. And I would urge, obviously, you know, I think we spoke about this before, the need for a liaison officer just to try and make the lads feel better. Because of any sort of ill feeling that Mason might have when he gets there, it's very, very difficult to go and knock on Ange Postecoglou's door and say, look, I'm not really happy with my digs, or this is not right, or I don't like that within the canteen at 17 or 18 years of age. So if there's somebody he could go and complain to and they could go and do it on his behalf, and I'm not talking agents, because agents don't always have the best relationships with people in clubs. It needs to be somebody who's just looking out for the kid, not looking to try and wiggle something extra into the contract or get themselves an extra few bob. Just Mason's well-being. How is he? How is he getting on away from the training ground? Because every manager I've ever had will tell you, in the training ground, I was absolutely fine. It was when they couldn't see what I was doing that I wasn't very professional.
And again, I suppose, emphasises the fact that support network. And I think there are... Did you have a player liaison officer? Like, that's a modern thing, maybe. Was there one when you were kind of...
The own hand was supposedly in that role, but it was never really, you know, it was never anybody to give out to. It was more, if I had anything wrong, my agent would be on top of it pretty much. But because, again, not to sound big-headed, I was sort of a big deal at Blackburn, so if anything really started to go on the wrong side of me, it would get sorted out pretty, pretty quickly. But like I say, whether you're a big fish in the academy or a small fish in the academy, you should be treated all the same. Not, well, we might have a payoff with Keith, so let's try and make him feel okay. Should be, whether or not, if Mason makes it, doesn't make it, X, Y, or Z goes over there, it's not doing well, they should still be treated, you know, as a human being.
During his time in underage, what kind of character was he? Was he one to speak up during training, or was he kind of quiet and let the football do the talking?
Yeah, really quiet. And to be fair, like, it was difficult, because even though I was the under-17s manager and he was playing at a higher level than that, he was younger than the lads he was coming in to train with. And you're thinking, you know, maybe he's just a little bit shy, a little bit within himself. But you would explain a drill and you're thinking, I'm not sure if he's getting it, because he wouldn't interact with you. You wouldn't say, yeah, I know what you're on about. But then he'd get the ball and you just think, he has been listening. He knows what he's doing here. And I love it. The one thing I love about him, he never gets bullied. You know, like I say, I spoke about him playing with bigger, older kids. I remember I'd done a game up in Talla, and the ball got fizzed him on the halfway line, and Kiko Lokevs came into him and he just turned him on his sixpence. And that's not to have a go at Kiko Lopez. It's to highlight how good and how his first touch is unbelievable for somebody his age. And when his first touch isn't on the money, he uses his body really, really well to protect the ball. He has a little bit of everything, Mason. Like I say, it's very easy, but you know, the forefront of my mind is Troy Parra only getting back on the horse now. Aaron Connolly arguably hasn't ever got back on the horse. Mm-hmm. So very reluctant to throw the could be this, could be that, but he does excite me, yeah.
The potential is there. Mm. You mentioned an agent. We're going to hear from his agent, who was speaking on the Oliver Callan Show on RT Radio 1 earlier today. His agent, also his uncle, Clive Clark.
You know, I know the industry a long time. I've been living in the UK for, you know, best part of 30 years now. So I know the football world over here. And it's something that, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years with Mason that we've been building up to this moment. You know, we know he's a very talented boy. And it's been great working with St. Pat's and Mason and trying to, you know, break the transfer record, which we were all set out to do probably this time last year, because we felt we had a player of a certain ability. My company broke a deal for Mason between St. Pat's and Tottenham. He's bent over to Spurs 3 years ago now, and it's a club that he thinks very fondly of. He had so many offers from Europe, probably 50, 60 offers throughout Europe. You know, in the likes of Celtic have come really strongly and pushed really hard for him, but he can only pick one club, and, you know, he chose to go with Spurs. So we decided to make it happen, and, you know, it's all done now. So this time next year, he'll be running out as a Spurs player. And hopefully this transfer fee is a statement transfer fee, and it shows you that it can be done. And, you know, we don't have to be giving the best young players away to English clubs for 100,000, 200,000. You know, the best ones should be going for this kind of transfer fee.
Clive Clark speaking on the Oliver Callan Show earlier today. Clive Clark, Mason's uncle, agent and former Republic of Ireland international. Clive Clark as well played his club football, most notably with Stoke City between 1999 and 2005. Up to 60 clubs in from. Is that agent speak? Or is that?
I would say it's agent speak. The fact that they're related as well is probably a little bit more. You know, I generally cut that in half. But look, it could genuinely be true, because he's playing men's football. He doesn't look out of shape at such a young age. I know he's an under 19 international. I think he might have got called up for the under 21s, but I'm not sure if he actually got a cap. I think he might have had to pull out injured. But that's just off the top of my head. So again, Mason is well ahead of the curve. And when people see potential like that, they usually want to get right behind it.
Well, I say he's the talk of the town, and I mentioned the League of Ireland launch today. Damien Duff was asked about the Pats striker.
The news of Mason Melia signing for Tottenham gives an added boost, I suppose, again to the league, but gives you a danger to have to consider again this season.
Yeah, well, they've obviously a top manager. They've brought in top players, and speaking as a young kid that tasted England, and I believe he lives down my way, I wish him all the very best. I'll be supporting him all the way and wishing him all the best all the way, and absolutely intrigued to see how he gets on, because he's a top young player in this league. Okay, let's see how he gets on at one of the world's biggest clubs.
What would you say are his attributes at the moment? That's still only 17 years of age.
I guess standout. He's three things. He's personality, and you might think it's nothing, but it's something I'm always hammering home to our lads, young guys, as in show your personality when you come up with the first team. He's absolutely done that. Athletically, he's a freak. He's been like that since he was 14, 15. But in England, he's going to be playing against players bigger, stronger, quicker. And that's where his quality and his football brain will come in, thirdly. So I wish him all the very best. It's brilliant for the league. But most importantly, it's brilliant for him.
And he's going to be up against your back four and your team several times this season. That's quite the challenge.
Well, he has to get picked first. They've top players. Keane is a top player. He'll play a lot of games. They play a certain way. Rarely play with two strikers up top. So he might be going over for £1 million. But I'm sure he's not going to start every game. And rightly so, for someone so young. It's still about slowly building. I'm sure that's what Stephen will do.
If he gets picked first, I'm sure there's Pats fans already envisaging Mason Melia scoring the winner November 1st or whatever the end date is, as Pats play Shells and Tolkien, secure the league title for Pats to go out with a bang, Keith.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Straight off the bat from Duffer, no holding them back. The mind games are in full flow already. But there is an element of what Damien's saying is right there. Although there's £1 million next to his name, the hard work really starts now. It's brilliant what he's done. Great achievement. Pat yourself on the back, Mason. It's great to do what you've done, but the hard work starts now.
Yeah, because it isn't even a case of going over to League One or Championship. This is a Premier League club. Yes, he might get loaned out for experience of senior football over in England, but we have to be honest about it. It's a massive step up.
It is. And look, the force, I'm sure he's probably had this already, because I know he's been over and back to Tottenham for the last couple of years now. So the force rondo, when he gets thrown in with the force team and the square, and it's a key ball session and the ball is getting flying around, it's one touch and you feel like you're on a merry-go-round for half of it. That's when you take a step back and you think, there's levels to this game. I thought I was at a level, but you know, just uncovered a total different attitude, different way of life to it. So look,
can you remember that kind of first like wow moment for you when you're over at Blackburn?
Yeah, I had a season ticket. That's what he called me the first time I was there, because every time I touched the ball, I lost the ball. So go, season ticket, go back in again. And but it was the likes of Tugoi, Roque Santa Cruz, Benny McCarthy, David Bentley. So although I'm looking at them and I was the worst there by, you know, a country mile, I was thinking, in a couple of months, I'm going to show you, I won't be going in there. So it's all about learning. And look, there will be times where you're thinking, I'm not quite cut out for this, but He will learn very, very quickly.
Mm. I mentioned it's good news financially for St. Pat's, and Gareth Keller, Pat's owner, was an integral part of the deal, negotiating that €1.8 million initial fee, 20% sell on. Figures could rise to €4.2 million. Massive numbers, unprecedented numbers for the League of Ireland. But you know what? It's about time. It's about time that I think that the league values its players, because for too long there hasn't been sell-on fees negotiated. I know Brexit kind of brings in a different aspect of it, with players going over underage, and there's contributions to the academy and so on. And Bowes are in line for a sell-on fee for Evan Ferguson. Perhaps Shell's let the ball drop somewhat with Gav Malloy going over to Aberdeen. But hopefully this is the start of the valuation for players being respectable for the league.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. And the first time I remember this being brought up, it was Damien Duff who brought it up, saying, you know, we can't keep letting our best players go. And I always felt like the Irish clubs were at a little bit of a disadvantage, because the Irish League has always been looked upon as a stepping stone. And if an English club comes in, or a club from the continent, it's sort of... I don't know how to put it, but it's almost looked upon as the Irish club should just step out of the way and let the player go and do what they need to do. And it can't be like that, because we want the league to get stronger, and the assets we have within the league, i.e. Mason, if other teams want them, they're going to have to pay for them, because we're just like every other league. We're trying to grow, and thankfully now we're getting some proper money. Like Mason now has set the bar, and any lad with this amount of potential now, the bar has been set. So like I say, I do. I think it's great for everybody within the League of Ireland.
Yeah, and it's important to have those structures as well. The multi-year deal, you know, we almost make fun of it. It's like, oh, it's the buzzword in the League of Ireland. But again, that's really important, that it isn't a kid getting paid pittance. There's minimum payments now because of the PFAI. There's multi-year deals, so we're nailing down people down. And it's not just season start to season end deals. It's year-on-year contracts. So there's a bit more... It's professionalism kind of being instilled in the league all round.
Yeah, and like you say, it's been getting better and better and better. I mean, like, I came back in 2015 and I signed for Drogheda. They played a little bit for Pats, and the league has just gone from strength to strength. And off the pitch, it's arguably stood still, but it's starting to get more and more professional. As we're talking now, you know, proper wages for people, proper structures in place, academies in place across the league now. And I know there's still an awful lot of work to be done, but I feel like we're going in the right direction. The product is as highly sought after as it's ever been. So, yeah, I think it's brilliant. I do think we're pushing in the right direction, but still a lot of work to be done.
OK, before we chat, Carabao Cup, is Mason Mealy going to guide Pats to the title, Keith?
I think he'll go very, very close if you look at how good Pats were towards the end of last season. But to be honest with you, Shane, can't rule out Shells. You know, you can't. I didn't give them a hope last season. I don't think anybody really did a win in the league. But I was looking, thinking it's going to be Rovers dominating again. And you look at their squad, looks really good. Pats have had some good signings. And I even look at Bowes. I look at Niall Moran and John Mountney. And I think there might be, is it Musa? Is possibly going to be announced fairly soon.
Another. Who, again, is someone, perhaps not many people would have known about him, but he was Sheffield United's record transfer fee. Yes, he's been out of football for a while, but if you're getting France under 21 caps, if you're playing in the Premier League, you're still going to be... We talk about the League of Ireland. I say this as someone who obviously supports the League of Ireland, but there still is a step up in calibre of player that perhaps can come back to the league, can still dominate. Now, there is a risk, because he hasn't played football, but there's a big chance he could run amok.
There is a chance of that, but look, I think... having had an awful lot of talent and gone into the league, and you know, I looked at it and thought, I'll be okay here. I don't need to be as fit as everybody else because I have more talent than everybody else. I got found out very, very quickly in an awful lot of games, and you can look at it and think, oh well, it's just because they're more athletic than me. It's not all about being athletic. There's some good footballers within the league. In the middle of the pitch, you know, everybody's playing out from the back now. Very rarely will you see, you know, even the bottom of the team, UCD, Dundalk, Drogheda, you don't see them booming up the pitch and saying, get after that. It's all about football, technical. And the one thing is, everybody can run. Not so much the case when I was there, but like I said, I have no idea who's going to win the league. You know, I always thought it would be Shamrock Rovers last season. This season, it's Pats, Shelbourne. Not quite sure how Derry are going to go. And there's so, you know, probably three or four.
Yeah.
You know, teams that could go and win it.
Well, we have it all to look forward to. President's Cup this Friday, Shells Drogheda in Talca Park, and then it all begins next Friday, the 14th. Shells Derry repeat of last season's season. Ending with Shelburne winning the league as well. And of course, Bowes Rovers look forward to the Viva Stadium. Carabao Cup, Newcastle, Arsenal this evening. How do you see this one playing out, Keith Tracy?
Oh, well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I haven't had a chance to talk about Arsenal hammering Manchester City yet. But
stay humble, Keith.
Yeah,
stay humble.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, stay humble. I think I'm not going to have a go at Haaland, because I feel like every other Arsenal player has done that for me already. But yeah, look, I think it's going to be a really good game. I think the one thing Arsenal have to do is go and get the fourth goal. It's probably a little bit basic to say, but going up to St. James's Park, the Geordies are going to be absolutely bouncing the prospect of a final. So it's literally get to the first 20 minutes, make sure Newcastle haven't scored, and make sure you score the first goal. Because if you make it 2-1, then maybe Arsenal will have a little bit something about them. I'm not too convinced, given that Arsenal put an awful lot into that game on Sunday against Manchester City. And
yeah, how will that affect them?
Yeah, you can't see them being able to make too many changes. You know, if they start taking some of the bigger hitters out, I know Saka's injured as well. Odegaard has had his injuries. Are we going to maybe rest him? Havertz as well. You know, if we're going to get anything out of the game tonight, we really do need to be ruthless. And there was three or four chances that Havertz had against Manchester City, and he just looked totally unconfident. He was one-on-one and looked like he wanted to pass. It looked like he wanted anybody to take the responsibility other than himself. So
Does the goal somewhat pave over that? I know the glaring miss where he almost had too much time to be cliched about it, but does the fact that he got the goal somewhat... paper over the cracks?
I'm sure it will make him feel a lot better, but like you say, Shane, he comes in off the wing and he just hits that with his left foot. It's more an instinct when he gets the ball and he's looking at the whites of the goalkeeper's eyes and he's thinking, what'll I do, when he just passes it wide, thinking, my God, you just didn't look confident at all there. So we're going to have to be very, very ruthless, because up the other end, Alexander Isak, with his 17 Premier League goals already this season, he will be ruthless. If he gets a chance, he will hit the back of the net. So we're going to have to defend really well. The running power of the midfield of Newcastle really frightens me as well. Tonali, Bruno Guimaraes, Joe Linton, I know he's struggling with a knock, not quite sure if he's going to start or not. And Gordon and Murphy on the wings as well. They're absolutely electric. We will do well to nullify all of their attacking threats. And like you say, if we get the first goal, there's a chance. But I find it hard to see Newcastle not scoring, which really puts Arsenal under the cosh.
Okay, 2-0 on aggregate to Newcastle. How important is the League Cup to Arsenal?
Well, I'd like to see us win something. I don't think we're going to win the Premier League, although, you know, obviously I spoke about us doing really well against Manchester City again, pushing in the right direction. I think Liverpool have just been too good for everybody this season. Don't think we'll win that. Can we win the Champions League? No, I'm not too sure. I think there's some really, really good teams in the Champions League, although saying that, Manchester City or Real Madrid are going to be going out fairly soon. They can't both go through. So maybe the Champions League, but I'd like to see us win something, Shane. I think we're too good of a team to, you know, be second best everywhere. I think we need to win something.
Okay. Silverware, all important. Briefly, keep before we take a break, tomorrow, Liverpool Spurs. Who knows if Ange will still be in a job when Mason Mealy signs for Tottenham. Will Liverpool... again, home advantage, Anfield overturn the deficit?
I think so, yeah. I look at the back four that Spurs have, and look, Archie Gray is doing an amazing job there. You know, he's coming as a centre midfielder, he's playing centre half, he's playing left back, he's playing right back, he's been bounced around everywhere as a really, really young player trying to learn the Premier League. So he can hold his head up high, but I think he will be highlighted on the likes of Salah, Diaz, Darwin Nunes, the wrecking ball, and McAllister in the middle is just, you know, laser targeted with his passing. So I think Liverpool will be able to score, and Spurs, you know, they just neglect the basics so often in terms of the defending set pieces in particular. So I think they just have too many weaknesses that Liverpool will expose.
Briefly, just speaking of papering over cracks, I know Spurs won at the weekend, but if they get knocked out of the League Cup now and then perhaps Villa do it in the FA Cup, is that the end of Ange?
Yeah, I think if it comes to light that he can't win a trophy, and the league form is going to really, really come under scrutiny. They're down the bottom end of the table, and you look, I can make an argument here that they're in a relegation battle. I don't think that's genuinely happening, but they are down the wrong end. I think Everton have overtook them as well. David Moyes has gone in there, had a little bit of a bounce and managed to overtake Everton. And you look at that, you know, the squad they have, it really is a really good squad. I know the injuries are mounting up, but you can't keep playing the same way when some of your big hitters are injured.
Okay, great stuff, Keith. We'll let you get out nice and early so you're home for the Arsenal match, so we will. Best of luck to yourself and Pats for the season, Keith. I say with
you
your
grits.
Of course I do. I'm always honest with you, Keith Tracy. We're taking a short ad break, then returning our attention to Gaelic Games.
Game on. GAA.
Now, Damien Lawler joins us with the latest Gaelic Games news. And I suppose only one place to start, Damien. We are heading into week 3 of the Allianz Leagues and the new rules. And we are coming to terms with them. Some for the good, some not so good, I think. I see Peter Canavan recently said it's not the finished product. I think that's a fair summation.
Yeah, it's a fair summation for sure. And like there are gaps there, and there are maybe slight issues that, while that merits great recognition for being trying to change our culture, and I admire it, I'm not so sure about it in the heat of battle either, Shane. Like, if you're in a big, big match and if you know handing the ball back to an opponent is going to skin you in your rear guard, so hard to do it. And equally then, if you don't do it in a big match and it costs you a 50-metre advancement up the field, for example, if you don't do it, well then that's really harsh as well. I think drop the ball on the ground. I think Jim Gavin and his FRC were right. Throwing the ball away was not a good look. It did hold up play. But I think leave it on the ground. I wouldn't agree with handing to the referee. They have enough to be at. Put the ball on the ground, place the ball on the ground and retreat back. That would be good. Still not sure about the goalkeeper coming out. People like Conor Gleeson wouldn't traditionally be a maverick goalkeeper, but he had a shot on target. He had a shot at goal last week, and you know that's good to see. But there are a lot of goalkeepers coming out of goals, and they're not really having an impact. And then you've got the likes of Armaz, Ethan Rafferty, who, along with Niall Morgan, looks best placed to capitalise. Like, don't forget, Ethan played centre forward for Armaz, so this is second nature to him. But he absolutely lit up the game that we showed last Saturday night against Tyrone, Shane. So if the likes of Morgan and Rafferty are there every day, I don't have much of a problem with it. But in general, the 12 versus 11, a lot of the time it's encouraging static defence and probably lateral play from the opposition, from the attacking team. And that's not good. There is a train of thought now that would suggest that the goalkeepers should just maybe be contained to their own area and not be allowed out. There's a train of thought that there's enough changes elsewhere in the game to maybe negate the need for a goalkeeper to come out. And that would be very, very interesting as well. So at the moment, question marks over the 12 versus 11 and question marks over handing the ball back to the referee. I'm eagerly awaiting, Shane, sadly for me, it shows my lack of hobbies, the data intelligence report from round two of the leagues. I really would love to see it because we had Brian Lacey on during the week talking about 60-minute games proposals. We had Jim McGuinness on last weekend about the rolling subs coming in. So I would love to see the amount of explosive runs the players are doing. And I do think it's going to kill off the weaker counties if they don't have a strong squad. That's my thoughts at this stage. However, a lot of the stuff I've seen is so positive, Shane. Mm. And the games, the solo and goal is just fantastic. The 3 versus 3 is top class. You saw how Galway used the Shane Walsh tactic for the 1 versus 1 throw-in. Shane Walsh ghosted in from the sideline in the first half and did it again in the second half and got a 2-pointer. So fantastic innovation by coaches. It's a new game. It's a new game in the making, and do you know what? People, I said last week it needs time. Not everybody agrees with that, but it does need time. We've only played 2 competitive rounds.
Yeah, most certainly needs time. As you say, only 2 weeks of football underway, and there is scope for change. So it is a conversation that will continue over the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, Damien, the GAA financial report is due out. What's to be expected?
Yeah, look, a big thing, we spoke about this last week, Shane, but like it's coming tomorrow now, and we're at an alarming level of spend, really. I suppose I've said this in the past. For last year, for example, 43.35 million euro was spent on counties, on county team spending throughout the country. And like that's an astonishing figure, but it's an increase of over 8% up from 2023. And I think that crept over 40 million euro for the first time. And it's more than 100% higher than it was 12 years ago. So Shane, 12 years ago, it's not an age ago. It was only 20 million of a spend. So we've doubled the spending really in the last 12 years, and that's really, really worrying. Now all you got to do is go down to your local shop, and you'll see that the cost of living has gone through the roof anyway. But I think it's unsustainable now, and I think even my own county in Tipperary, like the 2.175 million, and that's so hard to maintain. And you've got maybe senior footballers in Division 4 and senior hurlers didn't get out of Munster. So that's an awful lot of money. Of course, they have a strong underage system that has to be looked at as well. So and Tipperary was only the third highest of the 32 counties. So like the Munster counties, you know, it was referenced by the outgoing chairperson, Gerard Ryan, that it's just completely unsustainable. And I expect Tom Ryan to have a similar view tomorrow. I also expect Tom Ryan to shine a light on the activity at club level, whereby some of the preparation of clubs is now at nearly inter-county level, certainly of inter-county level of the past 2 or 3 years. And I think really to be sustainable about a chain, I think GAA clubs are going to have to start nurturing coaches from within again. When I say again, well, they're doing that anyway, but like a lot of coaches that win All-Ireland titles possibly have outside managers, outside coaches. It's a very, very demanding drain on a club, and our counties aren't enabled for it either, Shane. And I've made your point. You have every county, you have at least two or three fundraisers going on during a year. You're depending on sponsorship from everywhere. A lot of the time, the players and management of teams are going out raising funds themselves, and it's just a colossal amount of money. So I would expect that to be highlighted tomorrow. The funny thing that Brian Lacey said to me regarding the new rules, they are fantastic. Brian agreed with nearly five or six out of them in principle, but he goes, we are moving towards professional sport in terms of the demands that are being placed on players now, especially in matches. So I guess there has to be expertise in every level, and there is, and everybody's paying for it now, Shane. That's the bottom line.
Okay, well, certainly one to watch tomorrow with the GAA financial report due out. Damien, before we let you go, you were speaking to former Kilkenny Camogie player and Ashburn Cup winner Miriam Walsh ahead of the Electric Ireland Camogie Third Level Championship semi-finals and finals this weekend. Miriam gave her thoughts on how Camogie has changed during her inter-county career.
From when you finished up to when you started, was there a big difference in the volume of training that you did and maybe how you look after yourself off the field as well, Miriam?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I struggled with my knee really towards the end. You know, I was finding the gym work difficult on my knees, and I kind of have regrets. Maybe I should have looked for a bit of a tailored plan, you know, but that's something, sure, I don't know. You know, you can say this and that, but yeah, it's definitely gone really professional in terms of gym work and stuff.
It has. At least you have a few All-Irelands and a few All-Stars to console yourself with, Miriam, which is well deserved. Just on that note then, like the women's GPA was founded 10 years ago and then it merged into the GPA then. Are female GAA players being looked after the way they should be, Miriam? Like, again, there's a huge amount during the week that we don't see in terms of nutrition, in terms of travel, in terms of all the stuff that you have to do to be a top sports person. Is it sound enough or does it still need more work?
No, I actually think it's going in the real right direction, the GPA. Like, you know, we're getting the fundings for training, you know, travel expenses and all. And, you know, the girls coming from Dublin, I know Grace, I don't know how she done it, you know, 3 nights a week coming down from Dublin. But sure, I suppose you do it for the love of the game, really.
Yeah. And I suppose just to finish off in that bit of a chat then, like the integration thing is very, very slow and happening. But just even like from coaching Camogie teams up here myself, we don't always get pitches. You don't always get the access to the facilities. Does that integration thing need to happen, you know, fairly quickly as well for everybody's sake?
Yeah, like I think it is going in the right direction. I know ourselves, even in Kilkenny, you know, we'd never get Nolan Park, whereas the last couple of years now, we've been playing all our league games in Nolan Park. So, you know, it's fantastic to see that the GAA are looking after the ladies. And then even playing the quarter final before the semi-final, you know, you are getting supporters in, but just the time frame could change a little as well. You know, there's nearly too big of a gap before the men's match, you know, if they looked at timing more so, you know, to get more people in.
Okay, I have a final question for you, a tough one. Coaching, would you ever see a role for yourself in that, in either the women's game or the men's game?
Yeah, I think I'm expecting my first child now at the moment, so I would.
That's a slight priority in fairness.
So I would like to get involved in the underage, but I'm actually living in our local rivalry club, so it's not going down too well with the rest of them. So
I think I've just started a civil war there with that question.
Yeah, we'll have to see when the baby's born. Hopefully they'll get over it a bit.
Well, if there's a passport in Tullerone, maybe you can get the documents there.
I tried arguing with himself, but no, it's hurling with Freshford and that's just it.
Right. Well, look, I'd maybe leave that for the two of you to start out. Thank you, Miriam. Great talking
thanks,
to you.
Thanks, Damien.
Funny she mentioned Freshford there, Damien. Ruby Walsh wouldn't let me live down the fact that I was big enough Freshford. That's where my family come from. So I'm all for...
Well, there you go again. I started the Civil War in Freshford anyway. And himself that Miriam refers to, and Miriam, of course, three-time All-Ireland winner, three-time All-Star, former Camogie Player of the Year. Himself is Noel McGree from Freshford, and he's a right good hurler too. And the battle for that
the baby's club rights, that's ongoing, Shane. So maybe you might go down to your lineage and try and sort out the mess that I opened up today.
The more hurlers and camogie players and even footballers that pressure can get, the better. Tullerone have enough. Listen,
try telling that to the Walshers and Tullerone and the rest of them.
That's fair. Listen, they've been in the limelight for long enough. One of the points Miriam did raise there, you asked about integration, and it's going in the right direction. And we're 10 years of the women's GPA. It seems a lot done, but a lot more to do.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be honest with you. From what I can see, it's at the top level, it's going really, really slowly. There's no point to me saying otherwise. I might be uneducated in saying that, but I've yet to hear to the contrary. There's not a whole lot happening visibly or publicly for sure. But what is happening is at ground level and at grassroots level, as Miriam described there, the clubs and county boards are taking the initiative themselves and they're getting on with it. And my own club back in Tipperary, Killer One, you know, we amalgamated fully with the Camogie Club there a year or so ago. We're now called Killer One McDonagh GEA and Camogie Club. And I think a lot that example is there right around the country. Your facilities are there for the ladies teams now, whereas the working hall is readily available. I think there's a conscious effort to do the integration at ground level. And I think maybe probably like putting in the foundations for a house, that'll give you a more solid structure going forward then, rather than maybe the powers that be recommending a structure from the top down. I think to go from the bottom up is the way to go, and it's happening quietly, it's probably happening steadily enough. But yeah, 10 years ago the Women's GPA was founded. They have, you know, driven on the whole thing completely, joined the GPA, 7 million charter for female players now. And the integration piece then would be the final piece in the cherry in terms of, as Miriam said, like getting in before the men's games. People want to see matches, simple as. And I think you're only going to see role models in female sport if you actually get out and get to identify these people and get the players to come over and chat to your sons and daughters afterwards, because they are really, really good with their time, as are the men's players as well. So, look, it's going in the right direction. It is slow, but there's definitely work happening at grassroots level. And most GAA people would be able to testify to that.
OK, well, Nadine Doherty is still with us. We might get her thoughts on that after the break. But for now, Damien Lawler, we'll leave the conversation there. Gentlemen, as always.
Game on. Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty is with us to review and preview all of the Ladies Football League action. However, Nadine, before we get into the league action, we were chatting to Damien Lawler just before the ad break there, and his 10 years of the women's GPA, and Miriam Walsh there, former Kilkenny Camogie star, touched on the integration. As it stands, we are in line for a brand new association by 2027. I would hope there's a lot of work going on in the background, because there hasn't been much said publicly in the recent months. Anyway, before we touch on that, though, the Women's GPA, 10 years of a great service. I couldn't believe now, admittedly, that was only 10 years.
Yeah, I suppose an amazing service, Shane. And again, you know, we're talking about what's going on in the background. There's so much going on in the background of the GPA that we're unaware of. I suppose the watershed moment, really, for the WGPA was the amalgamation and the integration as one with, I suppose, then the core aim of the GPA, as it's now called. It's just that drive in gender equality in Gaelic games. And I suppose you look at what they've done in such a short space of time and you have such hope for the day when full integration materialises, that'll go in the same way. But, you know, I was just looking there earlier, because it was the 10 years, at what they've done. You know, I suppose the biggest moments was the player protest, United for Equality, and that delivered the players' charter. And I'm sure in certain counties that does have a bit to go, but I mean, it has really driven up standards in that regard. There's other areas that I suppose the general public wouldn't be aware of that the GPA cover for women. It's priority access to care pathways, which means players can access hospital, physio, orthopaedic treatments, female specific health and well-being. You know, that's, again, it's issues specifically affecting the female players in relation to health and injuries, and, you know, a lot of pride events as well. So really inclusive and acknowledging LGBT players across the association. But it's just been largely positive. And I mean, all you have to do is look at their board. You have to look at their the people who are full time working for them. And it's all equal. You know, it's all gender equal. The government could maybe take a little look at that as well and get some ideas from it. But it's been massively positive. And, you know, you talk to any female player in football or camogie and they just have nothing but praise for the GPA. So that's brilliant. And it's also, I suppose, they've opened up that line of communication between the LGFA, the Camogie Association and the players. And that's massively important, because that was probably missing before that. So that's been huge.
Hope that line of communication continues from the top down as well, because it would seem
that perhaps, and Damien referenced his own club in Tipperary, Kilran, kind of local clubs and going from the opposite direction, from the bottom up, that they're taking the bull by the horns and kind of integrating themselves.
Yeah, which is brilliant. And I agree 100% with Damien. You know, the tangible that you can see at the minute is on the ground and it's with the clubs. And as you said earlier, you know, we haven't got an update in a long time from the steering group. But, you know, the last update that we did get, they were very clear in what their looking to progress over the next years. And it is that kind of, if you look at, you know, it's fixtures review work group, a joint fixtures review work group. This is just some examples. One membership, one injury benefit fund, one staffing structure. It's a lot of admin, Shane. So they're the intangibles that you would hope now in the next 12 months will come in place and blend very well with the tangible that we're seeing on the ground in the clubs. And, you know, Damien touched on it earlier too. I think a massive piece for us for the women's game over the next 12 months, 2 years, is getting people to attend games. And I do think if you, just the last few weeks, looking at venues for league games, looking at crowds, I think the key way to going forward in that is the double header, Shane. And even if it is a case that people are coming in for the second half, that doesn't matter right now. What we need is to just get that exposure. And I think that is the only way that that will happen. So, as we said, Damien has said it, you know, it's happening in a club, it's happening a little bit in the county, but if we could get that one piece with crowds at games, it'd be amazing for the game.
Well, as I said to Damien, a lot done, a lot more to do, so hopefully it continues on that upward trajectory. In terms of the football itself, so Meath and Armagh are top of Division 1 with 2 wins from 2, and at the bottom are Mayo and Tyrone, who have yet to pick up any points lying in between mid-table, with a win and a loss each are Kerry, Dublin, Kildare and Waterford. Let us begin our review with Meath against Mayo and the return of Vicky Wall.
Yeah, and her sister Sarah. Her sister Sarah returned to full back, and I think that's the first time she's been in the panel since they won intermediate. Okay. Yeah, look, Vicky was back. You could see that she hasn't played football in a while. She was very effective, however, as she always is, and I think she notched 2-1 perhaps. But for me, the standout performer was Sinead Walsh, Mayo's full forward. Even though she was on the losing side, she was absolutely phenomenal. Really excited about seeing her play this year. But look, in general, the game, it was funny, Shane, very strong wind, and both teams adopted the same tactic when they were playing with the wind. They really pressed up high, attacking that the opposition kick out. But I suppose where Meath nicked it really was, while finishing was poor on both sides, they just managed to get those few extra scores, obviously, to get over the line. But what I liked about Meath, when they broke through the middle, they didn't turn around to try and retain possession. They just saw gaps in the Mayo defence and they went for it, and that's why they scored 2-9. Whereas Mayo, on the other hand, and perhaps it was that little bit of inexperience, they didn't see the gaps ahead and they continually rounded out around the middle to retain possession. But look, overall, it was a pretty decent game. It was physical. I think the ref found it difficult at times to keep it in check. But I think, as I said, the biggest thing for Mayo was maybe that little bit of inexperience up front. And just on Meath, you know, it seems like they've moved away from that mass defence that we were used to, Shane, with their counter-attacking style of play, which was great to watch. But for them, you know, without that extra defensive cover at the back, there were gaps there. And I think it'll be something that they'll have to have a look at down the line, because when they come up against the better teams, they'll be picking off scores a lot easier. But no, look, Meath will be delighted. I'd say there's a big push in Meath this year for a Leinster Championship with Vicky Wall back. Emma Duggan was on the sideline. They seem to have a few more big guns back. So it's an exciting year ahead for them.
Big win for Meath, who are at home next weekend in Park Tulchan, and they play Waterford, who were defeated by Kerry. Good showing from Waterford, though.
Yeah, really good, Shane. And do you know what it is about Waterford? And I feel like a broken record when it comes to them. They just have to develop the ability to perform for a full game against the top sides and take their chances when they're dominating. It's just been their Achilles heel for the last few seasons. They absolutely dominated the first half, and they were against the wind. Didn't translate that onto the scoreboard, and they had the chances. It wasn't that, you know, the wind was a factor. A mix of poor shooting, but have to give credit to Kerry, and, you know, this is why they're All-Ireland champions. Last week they shipped, what, 3-11 against Armagh. Very porous in those last 10 minutes. You could see that, I'd imagine, all week of training they worked on their defensive structure, and they worked at that tactic of delay, delay, delay. If a Waterford player stopped at all on the ball, there were 4 or 5 Kerry defenders in on top of them. Very physical. They played on the edge. advantage at times, but they were very, very good. And they won by three. They got a very fortunate goal in the first half, but their second goal from Sheaf Roche was just genius. She's just such a clever player, and she's a massive asset for them to have back this year. But look, with Kerry, as I said, Waterford were really pressed in the last 10 minutes, but Kerry held them, and they held them scoreless in that 10 minutes and got a really important win for them, their first of the season. But, you know, just looking at Kerry and Meath, I feel they're two teams who will be there, thereabouts when it comes to those top two places for the league final.
OK, first win of the league for Kerry, first win of the league for Kildare as well, who caused an upset against the Dubs.
Yeah, and they mightn't feel it was an upset, but you have to say it was a major upset, to be honest, Shane. You know, Dublin, I suppose, looking at their team, and we said this last week, they're going to be trying out a lot of new players, but they had a good mix there. You know, there was enough experience in the back, and, you know, they brought on Carla Rowe, Kate Sullivan and Orla Martin at half time, so plenty of experience there that you would have thought would have pushed them over the line in that second half. But listen, Kildare got a fortunate enough goal in the first 10 minutes, and that just gave them that cushion, I suppose, to shut out Dublin for long periods. And they were able to nip off a couple of frees, Kildare, just to keep the scoreboard ticking over. And that's what you have to do in league football, Shane. You know, if you get any kind of little edge at all, it's just having the ability to keep the scoreboard ticking over. And they did, and they'll be delighted with that. And that's a massive, massive result for them when you're looking at, you know, teams that could have possibly been relegated at the start of this year. They're not safe yet, but a huge, huge win.
Okay, Dublin will face Armagh in Parnell Park live on TG Cahir on Saturday, 3:30 throw in for that one in Dunnycarney. Armagh coming off the back of a big win against Tyrone, so it should be a cracking match this weekend between those two sides.
Yeah, Armagh were very impressive in the second half again against Tyrone, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see this weekend now. Will Dublin go strong with their first 15 just to maybe try and push Armagh that little bit and to get points on the board? You know, no more than Kerry and Meath, I think Armagh are really, really looking to win this league, Shane, and they're going very strong. They're looking very fit. They're looking very organised. And because there hasn't been that much change to the panel, and even in terms of their coaching staff, they're looking like they're in a good place. And I feel they could pip Dublin, even if Dublin starts strong. I think Armagh just are on that. They just have that momentum, I feel, going forward. But it'll be a good game. Definitely be a good game.
Can Kildare cause another upset away to Kerry and Killarney?
I don't think so. Now, unless Kerry, you know, really empty the bench and start with an inexperienced team, they have to be hot favourites going into that. And again, I see them just working off that really good result at the weekend.
Okay, and briefly then, Mayo Tyrone in Swinford, Meath Waterford in Park Tulchan. How do you see the Mayo Tyrone match playing out?
A tight game with inexperience on both sides, but just seeing Mayo there at the weekend against Meath, I think Mayo will shade it. And I think Meath and Waterford could be a draw.
A draw for Meath
possibly,
and Waterford
possibly,
following the start of the league that your own Donegal have had. Two draws from two in Division 2. However, we've ran out of roads, so we can't even get to that. Galway and Monaghan leading the way in Division 2. Nadine, thank you as always for coming in. You'll be back next Wednesday. Game On is back tomorrow from 6 o'clock. Massive thank you to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis working on this evening's show. And a massive thank you to you, the listener, for tuning in. We'll chat to you again at 6 tomorrow. Stay tuned to 2FM because Better the Silva is up next with the new music show.